Our study tonight is out of Matthew chapter 5, verses 27 to 30, biblically consistent righteousness of Christ's subjects regarding adultery. When Jesus asserted one's righteousness had to exceed the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees if he were part of the kingdom of heaven, he had to clarify to his Hebrew listeners how that could possibly be, for the Pharisees adhered to the principle of halakha, as they call it in Aramaic, concern for every jot and tittle of performance regarding the Mosaic law. Well, Matthew 5, 21 to chapter 7, verse 6 provides many illustrations of this point that Jesus made, and Matthew 5, 27 to 30 comments on how his kingdom righteousness regarding adultery far surpassed the righteousness of the Pharisees as follows. I'll read the passage and then we'll look at it in depth. Matthew chapter 5, beginning at verse 27. You have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say to you that whosoever looks on a woman to lust after her has committed adultery with her already in his heart. And if your right eye offends you, pluck it out and cast it from you. For it is profitable for you that one of your members should perish, and not that your entire body should be cast into hell. And if your right hand offend you, cut it off and cast it from you. For it is profitable for you that one of your members should perish, and not the entire body should be cast into hell. Okay. This is the law of adultery, the whole thing. I had thought originally that he was just talking about verses 27 and 28 being adultery, but he's applying it in all these other areas, and we'll get into why. What's the detail? Jesus said that the scribes and Pharisees taught one should not commit adultery. Now, Jesus declared that adultery is far more in God's eyes than just the physical act itself. The Greek Testament verb for adultery in Matthew 5, both 27 and 28, is the Greek word moicheu or moicheuo. This is sexual intercourse in violation of the marital union of at least one party involved. This is where at least one party is already married to another party, and then the union occurs. It could be with another married party that is not the spouse, or it could be with a non-married party, whatever. And it differs from the Greek word porneia. The word porneia is the word that we get pornography from and so forth. Porneia is every kind of unlawful sexual intercourse, which of course would include sexual intercourse by unmarried people, but porneia is used for anything that's aside from adultery itself. Well, this law was the seventh commandment of the Ten Commandments, and it was designed toward protecting the sanctity of the home. Since that's the goal, the protection of the sanctity of the home, we're going to read Christ's command and Christ's clarification in regards to that. Jesus, however, claimed that adultery in God's view was comprised of a man's merely looking upon a woman to desire. And the word desire is epithumeo, which means to desire her sexually in his heart or in his mind. Now, by way of application, since a married man or a married woman can either one can commit adultery, if the genders in Jesus' statement are reversed in that a woman looks upon a man who is not her husband with sexual desire, then she is also likewise guilty of adultery in God's estimation. This is any person, whether it's a man or a woman, who looks upon someone other than their spouse from Christ's perspective, and it does it with lust, this is the sin of adultery. Now, this law was given to protect the sanctity of the home. And since Jesus did not clarify if the one who lusted was married or unmarried, if one sexually lusts after anyone who is either not nor will be his or her spouse, that party is already guilty of the sin of adultery in God's eyes. Now, this is interesting. Let's say this is someone who's 15 or 16 years of age. They're not married yet. And they look at another partner with sexual lust, and that partner, they're not married to that person. From God's perspective, that's already moicheu. The reason is, it's violation of the marriage that's going to be. Because this person is already corrupting himself in reference to that. God has designed marriage to be, and he wants it to be so sanctified, that the sexual drive is met only with one's marital partner in marriage. Not before with anything else or any entity else. Well, So any mental lust for sexual union with party other than one's lifelong spouse is the sin of adultery in the eyes of God, for he is guilty of undermining the sanctity of the eventual home. This is really instructive for young people. I wish I could talk to every teen this way. If you're having a battle already in your mind in regards to someone else, you're actually stepping over and violating the sanctity of the future marriage that you're going to establish in God's eyes. I don't cover the Song of Solomon except in an adult Sunday school class, and I'm really hesitant about recording it and putting it on the web because it gets out there. But it's actually a how-to. It's God's how-to manual for honeymooners. It goes in tremendous detail. It's in coded form, but it goes in tremendous detail on the physical anatomy. In fact, it likens the physical anatomy. The head is Mount Hermon, and it comes down to the trunk and then the feet and so forth of the southern part of Israel. And if you decode it that way, it's a how-to manual on lovemaking. And one of the culminating statements in the end of the Song of Solomon indicates that if there has been unfaithfulness or if there's been lack of chastity before marriage, it actually hinders the arousal within the marital couples during the honeymoon. It actually deters it and blocks it. And so the Bible talks about, at that point, one of the lessons of the Song of Solomon is whatever you do, avoid any type of premarital lust, if you all possibly can, because all it does is spoil the honeymoon or creates complications there. Well, with this lofty standard on moral uprightness, Jesus directed if one's right eye was the cause for a sexually desiring a person who neither was nor would be his lifelong spouse, which sin keeps one from heaven, of course, apart from God's salvation, he should pluck it out and cast it from him, that just one member of his body perish rather than have the member be a vehicle to commit mental adultery and condemn all of him to hell. Now, Dr. Ryrie puts this in a proper perspective in his footnote. He says, this command is strong language, but it's used to emphasize the comparison, namely the sin of adultery is so dangerous because it leads to eternal condemnation that it would be better to lose eyes temporarily than to lose life eternally. So he's speaking in excessive language because he wants people to see this is very, very serious. Now, the Pharisees were guilty all over the place on this because remember the woman taken in adultery? Well, the Pharisees had gotten hold of her and brought her to Jesus to see what would happen and so forth. Well, how did they know she was taken in adultery? It looks like it was a plant. The thing is, the man who committed adultery with her is not there. Why? Probably one of the Pharisees. They were going to stone her, but not him. And Jesus comes back and says, he who is not guilty of the sin, in the Greek, the sin, the same sin, let him cast the first stone. And then he started writing the dirt. And what a lot of scholars think he was writing was the names of the women that they'd been sleeping with out of wedlock. And you'll notice all of them left from the oldest all the way down to the youngest because he was writing, if he knew the oldest had slept with Dorcas, so he writes Dorcas down there. The next to the oldest had slept with Anna, so he writes Anna down there. And whew, Jesus knew too much. So all the accusers left. And Jesus didn't say that they shouldn't stone her, but he just said, let him who's without that same sin do it. So the Pharisees are guilty, as all get out. And it's incredible that they were trying to hold to this. Well, in the same context of the sin of adultery, now we get to verse 30. If your right hand offend you, cut it off and cast it from you, for it is profitable for you that one of your members should perish and that your entire body should not be cast into hell. In the same context as the sin of adultery, one might translate his lust into the initial steps of heading into the act of adultery, where he might sin by using his hand to touch the part he lusted in a lustful manner. In that case, though the act of sexual intercourse had not yet been reached, that lustful act still constituted adultery in God's eyes due to the lustful motive that is behind it. So one was best cutting off his hand and casting it from him, lest his entire body be condemned to eternal destruction in hell. Note how this directive condemns all errantly lustful petting that falls short of actual intercourse. For in God's eyes, the motive of desire in the mind already condemns the act involved to be the sin of adultery. Not just fornication, adultery, because it's already violating the sanctity of the home that is yet to be established. This should hopefully be a wake-up call. You'd be amazed how many times I have heard in situations people will come to me where they'll say a Christian girl dated a guy and the guy was inappropriate, was inappropriately touching and so forth, and it created confusion and everything else and broke the date off. This has happened many, many times. It's wrong. It's sin. It's actually adultery in God's eyes. So in God's view, any thought or any act that has the motive of sexual desire behind it when directed toward a party other than one's lifelong spouse is adultery. God views this sin as devastating in terms of eternal consequences, so if we have committed it, we need to believe in Christ or go to hell. And we believers are to live above it in the Spirit's power, of course, as those who are headed towards Christ's kingdom. So may we trust in Jesus Christ for salvation, and may we avoid every form of adultery as believers. Many years ago, when I was about 14 years of age, it was the last year that we were in Africa as a family. I think it was the last year, or the second last year, one of those. There was a single missionary that I knew as a man. He was out in Africa, seemed to be a very nice man. And all of a sudden, I stopped seeing him, and I don't know if I got into a question with my mom about it or what. And she explained, she said, "Well, son, he was sent home to the United States because he had committed immorality with the Africans." And I was shocked. I never dreamed that a missionary could be involved in that, let alone this man. You know, he was seemed to be a very respectable, very mild-mannered man. And Mom went into all the gory details of what was involved. It was worse than what I thought. And then what was even horrifying to me is she told me that now when he goes back, he's going to have to get up in front of his home church and explain what he did, because they have to handle it as a church discipline situation at home as well as here in the mission where we let him go. And that was horrifying to me because I thought, oh no, you know, I can't imagine that. But then thank God for my dear mother. She turned to me and she said, "Son, you have the capacity to sin too in the same area." I was horrified at that. She said, "No, you're a young man. You're growing into young adulthood and so forth. You need to be just as careful about yourself as every other person is." And she put the fear of God in me at that particular point. And I thank God for that. I really think it's helpful for young people to recognize that human sexuality is like high-grade gasoline. If you pour it all over the outside of the car where it doesn't belong and light it, it does incredible damage. But if you put it in a gas tank where it's supposed to be, then it can be very, very useful and makes the car run like it's supposed to. Same with human sexuality. It has to be in the proper place. It is a wonderful thing. Outside the proper place, it's absolutely devastating in every imaginable way. And that's how we want to treat it, especially with our young people. But it's also good to be reminded of these things as adults.